Our next panel is about big data and features some of the key experts in the industry. Here with the courage to lead that conversation is RAIN's VP and Managing Editor, Brad Hill.
Thank you, Jennifer, and hello, everyone. Let's start by bringing the important people up onto the stage, our panelists. I'll introduce them in just a moment. We're here to explore big data. And from a distance, yes, we have an abundance of chairs. Just pick any one you want. From a distance, an audience selfie. Is that a selfie when you, well, never mind. From a distance, big data can seem deep and dense and dark and secretive, but up close, the real purpose of new large forms of analytics is to illuminate and enlighten and improve and reveal. So the purpose of this panel is to explore how big data illuminates and improves and reveals from the perspective of these three experts. So let me introduce them briefly. Closest to me is Eric Bischke, Chief Scientist of Pandora. Rob Favre with Triton Digital is CCO and GM of Data and Measurement. And Jeff Wender on the end is Senior Vice President of Digital at Nielsen. Thanks to each of you for being here. And let's get started. For radio, in all of its dimensions, big data is coming of age, I think it's fair to say, and it's increasingly recognized as a success driver. Jeff, let's start with you at the end. From your perspective, what is big data primarily about in the radio industry?
Yeah, sure. No, thank you, Brad, for having us, and really excited to be here today at RAIN. From a Nielsen perspective, and Nielsen is, I would humbly submit, the original big data company. We've been around for 90 years collecting a wide range of media consumption and consumer packaged good data. From a radio perspective and from an audio perspective, it's still the same thing. It's about driving outcomes. It's using big data, no different than any other information input that you get, to build better products, to ultimately better understand your audience, and to be able to reach very coveted individuals that you're looking to market to, and to validate those results. And by taking those data points that you can capture across a variety of different disparate data sources, it allows you to make more actionable, intelligent decisions that drive better outcomes. And that's what we've been doing for 90 years, and it's what we've been doing in the audio industry.
Good, thanks. Okay, better outcomes, a definite takeaway there. And Rob, you're head of data and measurement at Triton. From your perspective, how does technology's capacity to harvest large amounts of data and enrich the industry?
I look at this as more of a new thing when it comes to the digital side of audio. The reams of information that you're able to collect from the internet, it's just enormous, the data set that's available to you. And that's from a traditional broadcaster who's streaming all the way up to the pure plays. So all of that data is available to you as a measurement service. We take all of that information and normalize it, make it so that it looks the same regardless of what publisher it's coming from, and present it back. And it's like Jeff's saying, it works on both the demand side as well as the supply side. Everyone's looking to make better decisions, to drive better outcomes for their ROI, to get better bang for their buck is what it really comes down to. So what we're looking at right now is it's the coming together of a perfect storm. If you think about just 15 years ago, one of the best-selling hard drives on the market was a Seagate ST25, which was a 20-meg hard drive. It was a device about yay big and cost about $400. I have 800 times the data storage capability on my key, on my thumb drive, than that drive had. So it's the combination of actually being able to store those large amounts of data and the technology changes that have happened that allow us to get at it really quickly and use it. That's what's making a difference right now. So you don't wait weeks and months and then decide on little subsets of data to work on. You've got a full data set that you can look at. You can enhance it through third-party sources and then make that available to make your decisions.
That's interesting, and I think that's something we'll return to, is turning big data into smart data by organizing it and creating those data sets. Eric, Pandora has been a data company from the start, really. That's fair to say. It started as a data project many years ago. Can you describe how your data increases understanding of your audience and how it advances your mission?
Yeah, I mean, the thing Pandora does with all of our data, big or not, the one question we just ask ourselves over and over again is, how do we create a better listening experience for each and every person listening to our product? That's basically it. I think big data is like the means to the end. How do we make the music or comedy awesome for everybody listening? And that goes hand in hand with how do we deliver sort of the perfect advertising experience for everybody, one at a time. Those are really just the two things we focus on. I like the super ambitious model of like outcomes. For us, the outcome is how do we make each person happy? And that's it. It's just like that's the one and only thing we use mm-hmm. big data for.
Mm-hmm. So in your case, the data is facing in two directions at once, really. It's about personalizing the front-end experience for the listener, giving them the music they want to hear. So personalizing that way. And on the other side, helping your potential advertisers and agencies understand the...
It's absolutely right. And they really are the same goal. I heard Joanna mention this earlier on an earlier panel. You want the same outcome you want, that every single change you make that makes listeners happy also makes advertisers happy. Their interests are completely and totally aligned. Advertisers want, perfectly targeted at advertising at exactly the markets and people that they want to have that happen to. People listening to our service want the exact same thing. They want very relevant, meaningful experiences to them, both on sort of the music side and on the advertising side. So they're really just sort of one mission. I say one of the bigger challenges for us at the moment is how do we sort of merge those two worlds? Because for a long time, I think we put the music side first. Mm-hmm. And I'd say in the last few years, we've sort of shifted to thinking about like how do we think of advertising as a separate stakeholder? And the interesting challenges now are how do those things overlap? Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of interplay between what advertisers want and what listeners want. It's kind of the new thing for us is how do we merge the two worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, understood. I think we'll come back to that too. Rob, does size matter? The inevitable question in a big data conference. How big does big data need to be in order to be big data? What is big? What does it mean? And you talked about the evolution in technology from small and low capacity to big and high capacity. So is there a dividing line? Is there a tripping point?
I think that where, so to answer the question, does size matter? Yeah, it does. I mean, you've heard the panel just before us talk about this, that it really comes down to scale. So what you need is you need enough information to be able to make valid discoveries, to actually use those discoveries to grow your business in whatever your goals may be, whether it's making the experience better for the listeners, which makes it better for the advertisers. It's all using the best data available to make those type of decisions. The idea is that we're enabled nowadays to collect all of that information and make it available for those type of decisions. And you know what? We don't know what the answers are. The answers are in that data. So it's really about digging deep into it, mining it, and finding the things that are driving your business, Pandora, for example, and then pulling out those key elements, those nuggets that are going to make your business go in a direction you want it to. So size does matter.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, what do you think?
Well, being from Texas, we're required by state constitution to say that everything bigger is better. So let me just get that out of the way for starters. Rob's absolutely right. What big data helps to do is it helps to isolate anomalies and identify anomalies versus trends, versus looking at one data point and trying to extrapolate too much from it. It's important because it allows you to achieve precision. When you're looking for a very unique or a very acute audience within a local market, it's what big data is, having a treasure trove of information to really zero in so that a local or a small market can very nimbly go after that niche where a big company wouldn't necessarily be able to take advantage of in the same type of way. Big scale data is incredibly important, but equally important is quality of data, and equally important also is being able to stitch together and bring different types of data, different types of big data together. We're here in Indianapolis, the home of the Indianapolis 500. You can have a tremendous amount of information if you're a car driver looking down the road with one eye. Being able to use your entire view, bringing in different pieces of data. Pandora is a really good example where being able to take music preference data and being able to tie it to advertisers and to help them to understand not just to be able to identify users based upon demographics, but to understand that country music listeners, like myself, like particular types of products and have particular types of affinities. Those types of big data help you to do it, and consequently, it allows you to drive those outcomes with other types of data. Taking a look at purchase behavior and purchase data, which is something that we do at Nielsen to see that an ad exposure, once a person has been exposed, you can look then at that person's purchase information and purchase history to see whether it actually had an impact. So it's combining all those different types of data together. There are laws of diminishing returns, and there are bad sets of data. Yeah, I don't think a day goes by that people don't come in with different types of data, I'm sure to all of us, and say, wouldn't it be great if we took this and tied it to this? There is lots of big data can be bad data, but it's identifying the best possible sources, collecting it correctly with very strong measurement science, expertise, and acumen, and applying in the right way to drive those outcomes.
Mm-hmm. I thought somebody might say, it's not how big it's how you use it. And that does seem to be sort of what you're saying, is driving from a big universe of data to a data set that turns into actually smart data. Rob, would you say that then big data is not so much a technology challenge anymore with the advances that you referred to before, but really a challenge of refining, organizing, drawing relationships in the data?
That is where the challenge lies. And, you know, maybe when you talk about scale, when you talk about smaller customers versus larger customers, certain larger customers have the ability to actually go mine their own data and look at it that way, where the smaller customers don't. So it's really about striking that balance in between. You know, people talk about the idea in advertising there's money laying on the ground, well, there's money in the cracks too. And those smaller companies go after that money in the cracks. So they need the same tool sets, the same abilities, but they don't have the expertise necessary to actually collect all that information to stratify it, put it into the proper structures, and then use it. So that's where it really comes back to it's not about technology anymore. It's about making that data available in a structure that people can use.
Mm-hmm. Eric, let's talk about big data and smart data for you. It's about understanding the audience better. And some recent innovations that I know about in Pandora really draw extraordinary connections between a person's musical taste, which is the heart of the genome work, and their non-musical attributes, which will appeal to advertisers. Can you speak a little bit about that? Like, how the heck does that get done?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things that before you have big data, you wouldn't figure out. And I think until you do and you can see it and you can figure out how to mine it out that you don't truly get the texture there. And there is a lot of value there. Like, you know, we learn things like, you know, some obvious things like people who listen to reggae music are more likely to be a Democrat, and people who listen to country music are more likely to be a Republican. We learn things like, you know,
Not always true, but I'm not going to.
Not that I know. I don't know, but statistically.
Just putting a pin in that.
And I get to that kind of because we did a project a few years back during election cycles. Pandora is a particularly compelling platform for advertisers, for people running for office to promote themselves, both because we can target at specific congressional districts, but also because we're particularly good at predicting people's political preferences, which is useful if you only want to target people who are in the middle and might be swayed. Or whatever kind of targeting you want to do. And those sorts of things, like, you know, when I we started working on the Music Genome Project 14 years ago, at no point did I think we would be thinking about political preference, like, whatsoever. But it turns out that's super useful, both in targeting people to the right types of music. Then as I learn about, like, oh, you're clicking on ads that are weighted to the right or to the left politically, informs whether I should bias your music towards either country or reggae, for example. There's tons and tons of dimension like that, that when you have big data, you would never have thought about, you never considered until you've got like a particular political candidate in a particular congressional district and you're trying to do the right thing, both for the advertiser and for the listener. And that begins to get really interesting because it's a virtuous cycle that feeds back on itself. As you get good at one, the other one also improves, and that's.
Do you sometimes find your assumptions disproven? That seems to be one of the great values of big data to me, is that you have your instincts, which are really just guesses with informed by experience, and then big data can prove them or disprove them and enlighten you about different ways of getting better results.
Yeah, absolutely, and also, you know, for things that are as touchy as people's musical preferences or political preferences, when you get it wrong, people are quite vocal, right? So the consequence for playing a Bob Marley track at an inopportune time can be a powerful moment and potentially not a good way. So yeah, we have, you know, one of the types of data streams we collect at Pandora is all sorts of signals from listeners, from, you know, skips to what kind of stations they create to, you can thumb up and thumb down. There's tons and tons of interaction on Pandora, and all of the signals are used to inform us about when our predictions are strong based on the big data and when they're not.
Rob, let's talk about big data for small business. What's in it for small businesses, and how do they get in it if they're a single station or an independent pure play without a lot of big company resources at their disposal? How does that the big data realm connect and assist small business?
Well, it actually works fairly easily. That's where being a third-party provider of measurement data comes into play. If you are, whether you're a small single station or a medium-sized pure play, that type of thing, the bottom line is that in order to get your content out on the internet, you're going to create log files. And those log files tell us a lot of information. They tell us when someone started listening, what station they're listening to, how long they listened. And we're able to take that basic information and start building an audience profile around that. The way that it benefits those small businesses is they don't have to maintain that. They just tell whoever their streaming partner is to provide log files to us, and we're ready to go. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the pure play side. We have the ability to collect it on that side as well. You know, it's one of the dangers that you see is with the small companies is if they're traditional broadcasters who are dipping their feet into the streaming world, they tend to ascribe the knowledge that they have of broadcast radio to the internet world, mm-hmm. and it doesn't work that way. You know, a simple thing that big data has told us over the years is that if you think about the biggest number of listeners you're going to get for traditional broadcast radio, it's morning drive and evening drive. Well, what we found out is that the largest number of listeners that we have for the streaming side is between 1 and 4 p.m. normalized across the country. Mm-hmm. So completely different curve than what you're seeing on that side. But you would never know that without the big data to get there.
Oh, how interesting. Jeff, anything on that point, big data for small business?
What I'd say is I think small businesses are, in many cases, best equipped to take advantage of big data. They're much more nimble. They can take advantage and rely upon it and pinpoint specific areas of business that bigger businesses that have larger objectives and goals tend to overlook, and they can take advantage and be able to monetize them. Working with a number of different third-party partners allows small businesses, and in fact, we see at Nielsen some of the most savvy in terms of being able to take advantage of and utilize big data are the small businesses because they can internalize it very quickly and make actionable decisions much faster than larger businesses that rely upon a variety of different data, rely on a variety of different sources. So it's something that we see, especially with clients that take advantage of different types of data that we provide, making a significant impact on their businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think I have a dissenting opinion here. I think big data is the wrong tool if you're small, and I also want to say I don't think that's a disadvantage for you. I think back to the day we launched Pandora, and we literally just sent out links to our friends and family. So there was maybe about 40 people on the service. There was no big data in that moment for us. And the thing we started doing is we had conversations with each and every person using our service about how to make it better. And there's a ton of value in that. Big data makes a lot of things really, really hard. Like, you need astrophysicists to look at your data. You can't hire, like, an MBA with an Excel spreadsheet. Like, you literally need scientists to figure it out. So there's a ton of power for small businesses in having real personal connection with people and use your intuition in those, like, senses. Like, don't use... Like, big data is hard and confusing. If you have the power to connect with a small audience or, you know, on a personal level, there's a ton of power there. And I don't think that should be diminished. At some point, if you grow big enough, you have no choice but to figure out how to live in kind of the big data world. But don't go there too. Don't do that too quickly. You're making life a lot harder for yourself than I think is necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the answer to that is that big. You know, Eric is exactly right. There is a tremendous amount of overhead in terms of bringing in the measurement scientists, bringing in the infrastructure, building out what it takes to collect this type of data. But that doesn't necessarily mean as a small business you have to be the one to do that. There are plenty of partners out there that can put and have that infrastructure already in place and collect a tremendous amount of data that you don't necessarily have to do as a small business, and that's the way it works today. There's a simple answer. It's called www.nielsen.com, and you can get all the big data that you'd like. So,
you know, the only thing I would say,
I'm sure,
is that, you know, I do agree with Eric that the volume of data that you're looking at and all the different ways to slice and dice it can become bewildering. But there's a solution for that as well. And the solution for that is that we have ways that we look at the market and we view the market that are standardized across the market. Now you're availing yourself of those same measurements, and you're able to go look at that information and apply it to your small business. So, you know, Jeff's absolutely right. You don't have the scientists working for you, you know, at your small station, but you still can avail yourself of that information. Where you get where it gets complicated and where it gets confusing is when you as a small station think you have all the answers and you want to get at the raw data to basically pull together your own assumptions, and it kind of falls apart at that point. So, you know, it's just it's not a route to go down. So that's the main purpose that we have for having a simplified view of the data sets as well, and the ability to go in and really look at the raw data and use it yourself.
All right. Just a reminder, by the way, to everybody in the room, think up your questions. We'll leave time toward the end of the session for some Q&A from the audience. I wonder if we could talk about consumer acceptance of all this and privacy issues. Eric, when you were talking before about what you can learn about your audience, you know, I was imagining some of that audience sitting here and saying, wait, you know who I'm going to vote for from the music I listen to? You know, and there's a great deal of consumer fear around what they perceive as a secretive kind of harvesting and teasing out of hidden personal facts. And I'd like it if all three of you had something to say about this. Maybe we can start with you, Eric. Just what's the concern? Is that internally in your companies, is that a concern, privacy and consumer acceptance?
Yeah, so privacy is definitely something we're quite aware of at Pandora. What you're talking about just sort of reminds me of a moment. We launched a Facebook integration with Pandora, so everything you're listening on Pandora would be transmitted to your Facebook timeline. And the day after we released this feature, we saw a huge number of station deletes, like extraordinary number of people versus standard were deleting stations in one day, and we were worried we had some technical bug. But what's happening was people had a lot of NSYNC and Britney Spears and Guilty Pleasure stations that overnight were being deleted, and people had sort of an expectation about that might not become more public information than they might want. I think that was actually the first moment, I think, that we started thinking about privacy in a very different way, because that's it's laughable, but it's also something we want to respect. People on Pandora today can kind of opt in or out of all of that behavior. At Pandora, we use privacy data for two sorts of things, and we make this very clear with everyone who listens to our service. We use it to make the music better, and we use it to improve the advertising, and those are the only two things we do with our data. We don't sell it to third parties or do anything else with it. I think the main kind of thing we do at Pandora is we try to be as honest and forthright and as consent-based with how people's data is used. And in general, I think that's appropriate. If you ask, you know, if you ask somebody, would you like your profile information to be public? Would you like your data to be transmitted to Facebook on your timeline? Would you like, you know, to opt in of, you know, for how your data is shared with advertisers. That's how it works at Pandora today. And I think that's, I think it is important as technologists tend to be more paranoid, I would say, than the general populace. which I think is a good thing because I'm glad we've got people paying attention to how people's data is used, and then also give people the right to control how it's used.
Mm-hmm. Rob, any thoughts? We talked about this a bit on the phone. I wonder if you could share that.
So I, you hear a lot in the press, and they're looking to sell stories and make things exciting and get people to read what they're writing. But, you know, something that you said when we first started this discussion, I don't know that you listen to reggae music and that makes you a Democrat. What I know is that there's a male in some zip code of a certain age that listens to that type of information. And by knowing that type of information, and these are the stations you listen to and that type of thing, we're able to better serve you ads that would be more relevant. So, they have a term called personally identifiable information. Well, we're not collecting any personally identifiable information. We're collecting information that's used primarily for targeting and for marketing. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it that way, what the agencies, when we provide our agency feeds, Joy was speaking earlier about we provide a feed to her of Pandora data. We're basically saying that you have this many listeners in this particular market, and they fall across these age cells and these genders. And that's the information that we're providing. Mm-hmm. So, Pandora has a lot more information than what they are passing on to us.
Yes.
But that the whole idea is, I mean, the last people that really, really cared, in my opinion, about the privacy concerns were the baby boomers, because Gen X, Gen Y, and Gen Z, it gets easier and easier as you go forward with that.
So there's a demographic aspect to this?
Yeah, there is. Basically, you know, the younger your audience is, the more they're willing to share that information. That's what they were brought up with. Mm-hmm. So they don't have the privacy concerns that old farts like mm-hmm. us do.
Yeah.
I think first and foremost, being in the business of collecting very sensitive information from consumers, privacy is a discipline within Nielsen. This isn't an afterthought. It isn't something we think of at the very end. This is something that is thought of at the beginning, in the middle, and in the end of every progress. And the question that you asked, Brad, how do we get consumers more comfortable? I think it's the other way around. I think we have to do a better job as an industry of providing consumers with a clear understanding of what it is and how we're planning on using that data, getting their consent, and being able to demonstrate that there is a benefit. And I think there's a tremendous amount of benefit that is provided. Both Pandora, Triton, Nielsen, there's a lot of value that gets delivered from those from that data in a way that is consent-driven. Part of it also is that as we utilize this data in more accepted ways and we show those benefits, consumers are going to be more willing to do that. But there is a clear there's a requirement for us in the industry to not just think of it as an afterthought, but to be proactive. And that's something that we do within Nielsen. We proactively go meet with privacy advocacy groups. We go to meet with regulators and spend time and explain in advance of launching new products or exploring new ways of collecting data to help them understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how we apply a very rigorous process to maintain privacy. But today, as Rob mentioned, he's absolutely right, people are more willing to share data, how we treat it and manage it so that we can use it, utilize it in much more effective ways is one of the most important things that we can do.
Mm-hmm. Jeff and Rob, you provide data sets to clients, and I'm thinking that to some extent this must be a two-way street and that you learn things from them even as you help to illuminate their businesses. And I wonder if we can dig in a little bit to the key data points that are important to different constituencies. We could start with buyers and agencies. What are the key points that they're trying to understand better from data? Rob, we can start with you.
Right now, it's actually a simple data set for most of the agencies and advertisers. It's accurate demographics and geographics. Mm-hmm. So if you have that, if you could pinpoint the listeners and actually come up with their gender and their age and place them into a market reliably, that's where most of the transacting is happening right now. Now, you heard Willie talk about in the last panel how if you were driving past a Wendy's, how cool it would be to have mm-hmm. a coupon pop up on your phone. And every agency that I go into and when I talk about measurement and stuff like that, they all say, yeah, that would be so cool. but there's no model in place to transact on that business right now, much less the technical hurdles that have to be overcome to put that in place. So really, from my perspective and from the information I've gleaned from the agency visits I've been in, it's really about accurate demographics and geographics right now.
So it sounds like you're saying that on the buy side, the agencies might be underusing the information that's available to them?
Well, the model supports a certain type of transactions right now. So that's where you're at. So we're dealing with the present. Now, the future information is there. It's available. If you want to only target a campaign that will only play on Sprint mobile phones rather than AT&T mobile phones, that capability is there, too. And there are people dabbling in that. I don't want to give the wrong impression. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't taken over the entire industry yet.
Sure. Okay. Jeff, what are your thoughts?
I think Rob's focus on demographics is very important, and I think that is clearly one of the driving aspects of I think what a lot of consumers, what a lot of advertisers really are after. We look at it a little bit differently at Nielsen. I think first and foremost, the most important data point that we can provide is what ultimately meets the client's objectives, and I think they vary depending upon what the end goal is. We have a structure within Nielsen that really began with the media side of the business, but really can be applicable to any type of consumer activity. It's about three things. It's about understanding reach, understanding the audience, who they are, what they are, based upon different types of demographics, other types of behavioral characteristics, so that you can identify where they are and how you can reach them. What we call resonance, which is once you have an opportunity to engage with that audience, whether or not you're actually impacting their behavior, whether you've changed their attitude towards a particular product, and that's a very important thing. We talked about it a little bit, I think, in the last panel about the transition away from just not only understanding where the audience is, but understanding how that's impacting and influencing purchase behavior. And the last, what we call, is reaction, which is return on investment and being able to validate. There's a lot of companies that deliver or are able to collect demographic data. And what we have found and actually have built a pretty substantial business around this is that first-party registrations data, while valuable, sometimes isn't always accurate because people in a private one-on-one setting don't necessarily always deliver perfect or verifiable data. And there's third-party validation systems that can be put in place to ensure that the audience that is being sold is indeed the audience that the marketer, the advertiser, is buying, and to be able to get value for that. And having those systems in place where you can determine and understand what that return on investment is and that reaction, those are very important key metrics that buyers and sellers need in order to complete that transaction process. Mm-hmm.
Now, Erica, Pandora, you've developed audience, been able to identify audience segments that are more granular than the transaction model that we're talking about here. Is there a square peg in a round hole phenomenon happening where you have to smooth off the edges in order to get into the buying systems effectively?
Yeah, I mean, the way we approach the whole audience segmentation challenge is we start very personal. Like, it just starts from, very, very personal. We have very, very granular, very specific ability to target at particular audiences. To integrate with traditional purchasing markets, we roll them up, we aggregate them to speak in the language that is most comfortable for whoever and however people want to make a buy. I think over time that will, as we educate and communicate, it's like, yeah, I'd rather be very, very specific in targeting just, 18 and 19 year olds who are about to go to college and likely to go on the trip next year to Europe over summer vacation, something like that. Most people would be uncomfortable buying something that specific right now, but I don't think that'll last forever. It was interesting. Jeff mentioned how you can't always trust first-party collected data. You'd be surprised how many people listening to Pandora say they live in 90210, which is it's kind of interesting.
Oh, Jeff. It's a terrible admission to make, Jeff.
That does bring up a good point. That does happen with first-party data. Most of you guys know who the Media Ratings Council is. They're a good housekeeping seal of approval for measurement services. And what we go through to maintain that accreditation actually looks at first-party data collection as well as our processing of that data. And the MRC requires controls to be in place. And those controls actually look at that the 90210 phenomenon and how to correct it and what information you have to correct that. So it's a very simple thing on the accreditation side for Triton, at least, in that if you're listening, we count you, and if we count you, we put all types of filters in place to make sure that ears are attached to what we're counting. Mm-hmm. And those filters are audited every year as part of maintaining that accreditation. So it does lend more credibility to the audience that you're presenting to those buyers and planners.
Jeff and Rob, or at least the two of you at first, what's the takeaway for streaming audio publishers and radio of all sizes that have not yet received the gospel of big data, or who are holding the book in their hands but haven't quite integrated it yet? What's the on-ramp for an independent station, for example, that might be thinking we've got to get smarter about knowing our audience and driving outcomes? And I know that part of the answer for each of you is your site's URLs, but I want to think about get your perspectives on how that person should be thinking. What questions should they be asking?
You know, one of the first things that comes up.
I'll go first. No, please.
So, one of the first things that comes up when you've got a station and you put that station online is you want to generate listeners. You want to get audience coming to it. So you want to make those streams available in every way possible to anyone who can consume those streams to grow your audience. Where that backfires is once you actually grow that audience, what do you really know about it? Because you don't have any registration data. Typically, you don't have the ability to actually pull in third-party data to actually build a profile around those listeners. So if I were going to basically say, here's the 1, 2, 3 of how to do this, what you really need to do is traditional broadcasters need to start looking at a registration front end to collect more information about their listeners. Mm-hmm. Because it returns the dividends it returns are enormous in the back end. Mm-hmm. So your initial mentality is to grow your audience as big as you want. When you decide that you want to start monetizing that audience, you've found that you've made your job harder by putting it out there everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Step one, what do you want to accomplish? There's a tremendous amount of things that you can utilize big data for, especially even small individual radio stations from their digital channels. You know, where do you see, listening activity increase or decrease depending upon the types of music that you're playing? I mean, take a cue from Pandora to be able to understand and harness and understand more about what's really driving listening and how you can continue to optimize your content to make it better. What is it about your particular audience? Understanding your audience better, not just online, but even offline. You know, what are some of the other data points that you can capture to better understand how to market to those individuals? And what are your strengths? Being able to collect different types of data so that when you sit down with media buyers and planners, you can articulate your vision. It's understanding first what those questions are before you sit down and stare at big data, because as Rob and Eric and our measurement scientists will tell you, you can stare at data till you're blue in the face. There's plenty of data. I think the latest statistics are somewhere in the order of 1.8 zettabytes, and this is about as far as I'm going to go into the engineering acumen. I think this is we're talking about trillions of gigabytes, just to give you a scale of the amount of data that's out there today. But understand what you're after, because there are tremendous amount of ways that you can take and harness the data. It's starting to understand what your objectives are first before you try to attack it.
Now, Eric, you've said that for small operations, big data might not be right, might be too big or even harmful. But whatever that scaling point is where it becomes useful, what's the best advice in how a pure play station manager should think about? Is it registration, as Rob said? Is that the big key data ingestion point that would really help the most?
I like the objective-focused sort of framing on it. I think that's it's definitely the way Pandora kind of went about it. The reason why we didn't think about big data until we had big data was because we were just focused on doing the right thing for our specific objective, which at the time was just play amazing music for people. I think there's a kink that happens if you're operating as a online radio service like Pandora. I was thinking a lot about just what the heck is what exactly is big data, because I'm not sure who started using the term. But there's a particular inflection point that when you can get to will really help you leverage your business or your objective or whatever it is. And the point you get to is when your audience is big enough that you can start running A-B tests on them. You can start running experiments on the people using your service, whatever that might be. And you can give different people different treatments, and you can measure it. And when you can do that, you no longer ever have to use intuition to guide your direction, your product. What you start doing is you use intuition to make guesses, then you run experiments, then you measure exactly what happened, and you can steer based on what's really going on in the world. At Pandora, we have this privilege because we've got, I don't know, 80 some million listeners in the last month, and a quarter billion people have given us the registration data to date and have listened at some point. That's so many people that we can run, you know, very small experiments and get a very particular measurement for exactly how a particular advertising campaign runs or how a particular new type of music works in just Indianapolis, you know, people in some specific tiny little demographic. And when you can get to that point, you have this huge step function in terms of what you can do. Before you get to that point is the hard part. And science people call it like the cold start problem. It's like the cold start problem. What do you do before you have enough data? And I think that's usually the challenge. And I think that's very domain specific. At Pandora, we did the Music Genome Project and paid musicians to listen to music for decades. That was our cold start solution. But
I'm seeing that our session... I finally put my eye on our session clock, and we're running down. So I do want to throw this... Thank you, Eric. Sorry for that interruption. I do want to throw this into the audience. Any questions? We have a mic here. There are some hands raised. Yes, there are some questions over there.
I have a question for Rob Fave of Triton Digital. You mentioned something about filters for making sure the ear is attached. Now, I've done a little bit of background investigation into Triton Media, and it appears you are using a server that is very, very, very based on Icecast, but not Icecast. Your player is a Flash player, but is also very speedy, and I'm not sure how you're doing your stats, because you have done something with Icecast, or something from Icecast, and I was wondering what changes you have made in the back end that have allowed you to do things like filter out people who are audio ripping or
not listening. Let me interrupt this. I'm sorry. I think that's a good question for a private discussion after the panel. I think it's a little technical for us. If we could take another.
Fair enough.
Yeah, thank you, because we don't have much time. Find another hand, John.
Thanks. Question for Jeff. Just could you give us an update on where Arbitron is in its thought about measuring streaming radio and what we could potentially see from you guys in the future? Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Measuring digital audio is is probably one of our biggest priorities. We've announced earlier this year that we are building out digital audio streaming measurement. Always, you know, golden rule is never speak before your CEO speaks. So during our second quarter earnings announcement, he made some announcements about a lot of the momentum that we have around what we're doing to build out our digital measurement solution, the number of partners that we have that are on board. Expect to see some very exciting announcements really soon. But we've built a very unique solution that we believe will offer some tremendous additional value to the market that I don't think is out there today. But we're really looking forward to bringing it and sharing it with you all.
Yeah, Jeff or Rob or both of you.
Ten-word question and
20-word answer. What's the critical mass for either a medium or large pure play or an aggregation of pure plays to where you can be relevant to an ad agency? Is there a number? Million, 2 million active sessions, total listening hours. What's the barrier?
I don't necessarily believe that there is one. I think, you know, if you have the ability to show critical mass and you can show that you can bring a valued audience to marketers and agencies at different levels, whether you're talking about a national, I mean, if you're talking about a national brand, if you're talking about a local market brand, all varies. But step number one, and I think Rob would agree, I don't want to speak for him, is you have to be measured. You have to be able to demonstrate and showcase that you have an audience and that you have critical mass, and then being able to demonstrate, you know, behaviors and characteristics from that, including some of the very basics such as demographics and others and other characteristics. That's your starting point.
Wait, if you've got people on the streets pounding the street in your local neighborhood, going to tire stores and stuff like that, you can show them metrics that are, you know, reliable and effective that they can trust, then you're capitalizing on everything you've got right there. But it's like Jeff said, you got to be measured first.
Thanks, Rob. Please just join me in thanking.
Can I just really ask really quick question of Jeff again right here?
Five-word question, 10-word answer.
Do you have anything in place which separates tracking of the audience between HD1 channels and HD2 channels currently?
Let's take that one offline. It's a larger question, but I'd be happy to answer it for you.
Please join me in thanking our expert panelists, Jeff, Rob, and Eric.